Why are teenagers so dramatic? If you've been a teenager or helped to raise one, you know that this stage of life can include a lot of emotional turmoil. Helping you navigate this turmoil is Lisa Damore, author of the new book, The Emotional Lives of Teenagers, Raising Connected, Capable, and Compassionate Adolescents. Lisa is a psychologist who co-hosts the Ask Lisa podcast, writes about adolescents for the New York Times, appears as a regular contributor to CBS News, and is the author of two New York Times bestsellers, Untangled, Guiding Teenage Girls Through the Seven Transitions into Adulthood, and Under Pressure, Confronting the Epidemic of Stress and Anxiety in Girls. She joins us now to share five big ideas from her latest book.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Lisa Damore. I specialize in helping adults understand and support teenagers through my books, articles, social media posts, and podcast, Ask Lisa, The Psychology of Parenting. I'm here to share five key insights from my new book, The Emotional Lives of Teenagers, Raising Connected, Capable, and Compassionate Adolescents. Insight number one, mental health isn't what we think it is. One of the main reasons I decided to write this book when I did is that the cultural definition of what mental health is started to veer very far from how we understand mental health as research and clinical experts. And what I mean by that is that we as a culture have come to talk about mental health as though it means feeling good, that you know you're mentally healthy or you know your kid's mentally healthy if there is a sense of feeling good or calm or relaxed. While this may sound good, it's actually not a good definition of mental health. And the reason for that is that we all know you could start a day feeling good, calm, and relaxed, and any variety of things could come along that would ruin your day. That doesn't mean you have a mental health concern. It means you're having a really bad day. So instead, we want to work with a definition that is accurate, and I also think vastly more reassuring. And this is the definition that sits at the heart of my book. And here it is. Mental health is not about feeling good, but it is about two things. It's about having feelings that fit their context, that make sense in the moment, and then managing those feelings effectively. Insight number two, psychological distress can be evidence of mental health. So to pick up on the guiding definition of mental health that sits at the center of my book, the one that has two parts, that mental health is about having feelings that fit the moment and then managing those feelings effectively, it's important for us to recognize that sometimes the feeling that fits the moment is a painful feeling. So say, for example, we have a teenage boy who has a big crush on someone, finally lets them know, and that person makes it clear that they don't feel the same way. Of course, what we would expect is that he will be upset, right? Maybe very sad, maybe very uncomfortable or unhappy for a few days. And as much as we hate to see him in emotional pain, from the view of psychologists, we would say, yeah, but it's really evidence that he works just as he should. That when painful experiences happen, we expect people to feel those emotionally. And in fact, if we're concerned, it would be because of the absence of feelings that make sense in the moment. Now, I know it can be very hard, especially given all of the distress that teenagers went through in the pandemic, to be embracing of psychological pain as evidence of mental health. But that really is how it works. And when we think about mental health, what we want to focus on is not so much the presence or absence of distress. We fully expect it sometimes, but whether that feeling is being managed effectively. So if we go back to our boy, if he were to be kind of weepy or want to go listen to his sad playlist for a while or try to make himself feel better by going for a run or maybe try to take his mind off it a little bit by watching some TV, we would put all of that in the category of handling the feeling well because he's getting relief and it comes at no cost. If, on the other hand, he were to manage the feeling by smoking a lot of marijuana just to make the feeling go away, or maybe hopping online and being really rude about the person who doesn't like him back, then we might have some grounds for concern. Because even though he's getting relief from what he's doing, it comes with a price tag. Insight number three, psychological distress helps teenagers learn and grow. As much as it can be strange to welcome psychological distress as evidence of mental health, which it often is in our teenagers, it can seem even more strange to welcome it as a catalyst for growth. But we also know that to be true. there are a couple of ways that we see this play out in the lives of adolescents. One is that their feelings are informational. So say you have a kid and every time she hangs out with a particular classmate, she feels really lousy after it, that the person isn't very kind or talks to her in a way that's diminishing. We would want her to pay attention to that information, and we would want her to use that information to make choices about how much she's going to hang out with that kid going forward. So the experience isn't pleasant, but it's got real value. Another way that we can think about the role of distress in the lives of teenagers is that it does help them grow. So let's take the same girl, and let's say that maybe she cheats on a test and gets caught by her teachers. This is going to be really unpleasant. She may feel really embarrassed or ashamed. She may feel, you know, deep regret about having cheated on the test. And as the adults who love her, we may hate seeing her go through that painful experience. But one thing I can tell you as a clinician is when I've sat with teenagers who've gone through hard things, and when they have said to me, like, this feels awful, like, I don't want to feel this way again, those experiences usually give rise to incredible development. They are often experiences out of which kids pivot and become vastly more mature than they were before because they've gone through something where they don't want to have that happen again. And so then they make better choices going forward. Insight number four. Adults can't prevent or quickly banish teens' painful emotions, but we can help teens regulate them. In my book, I talk about all of the ways that distress naturally comes into the lives of teenagers and how often we actually want it to be that way so that they're learning and growing. And as much as we would want them to feel better fast, we can't always make that happen. But we can help teenagers regulate emotions, and a big part of my book is around the science of emotion regulation. When we look at emotion regulation as psychologists, we actually divide it into two categories: helping kids, or actually anyone of any age, get relief by expressing their emotions, and helping kids get relief by bringing their emotions back under control. And I devote a chapter to each of these in my book. Now, you may be surprised to hear me put expressing emotions and getting emotions under control on equal footing, but it is how we think about it in psychology. And here's a story that I always think about when I'm considering why I wrote the book the way I did. So about 20 years ago, I was very, very pregnant with my older daughter, who's now a college student. And it was my first child, and I was wrapping up a meeting with a senior colleague. And I knew we wouldn't see each other, and I think she knew we wouldn't see each other until after I'd had this baby. And so the meeting's over, and she says to me, hey, do you want to hear how psychologists mess up their kids? And I said yes, because I knew exactly what she was talking about. And she said, they talk about feelings too much. And as soon as she said it, I knew exactly what she was describing. One of the hazards of our profession is that we have the training so that when our kids are upset, we might say, okay, well, what's going on and how do you feel and where is this coming from? And that may have some utility, but there's also a point, and this is what my colleague pointed out, where it becomes helpful to say, okay, you've been upset about this for a little while. Why don't we try to figure out what will help you feel better? Where we naturally move towards helping kids bring their emotions back under control. What I can say is that in the intervening 20 years since I had that child, I would say the culture has moved very much to the spot of being the bad psychologist parent, however well-intentioned it may be, sometimes talking too much about feelings when there are many other options available to help kids feel better. Insight number five, getting teens to talk about their feelings when they are upset is only one way to offer support. In my work as a clinician, I've become very aware that we're at a place in our culture where parents feel like if my teenager's upset, the best and perhaps only solution to that moment is to get my teenager to tell me what's wrong so that I can offer my wisdom and support. Sometimes this works great. And when it does, more power to you and to your teenager. But sometimes we see something else, which is that a teenager starts talking about what's upsetting and actually becomes even more upset as they go. The term we use for this is rumination, when there's a sense of sort of spinning one's emotional wheels or picking at an emotional wound, that the more time spent on it does not actually contribute to feeling better about it. If this is the case, or if a teenager is just not in a mood to talk, the good news is there's a lot of other options. So here's a list of things that we can do that help teenagers feel better that don't involve talking about feelings. We can give them opportunities for nonverbal expression, and teenagers often find these on their own, listening to music, banging on the drums, going for a run, getting their feelings out in any variety of ways. We can also turn to the very long list of things that help kids bring feelings back under control. Sometimes they seek out comfort. Sometimes they find a temporary distraction. Sometimes they're very eager to engage in problem solving. Sometimes we as adults can help them get a fresh perspective on whatever the problem is to help them feel better. But the bottom line is sometimes talking works, and if your kid wants to talk and it is helping them, fantastic. But I don't want readers or parents to feel like that's their only option, because in fact, when it comes to helping teenagers regulate their emotions, we have a lot of choices beyond just talking that work really well for them. Thank you so much for listening to my description of the key insights from The Emotional Lives of Teenagers, Raising Connected, Capable, and Compassionate Adolescents. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Lisa. That was Lisa Damore with 5 big ideas from The Emotional Lives of Teenagers, Raising Connected, Capable, and Compassionate Adolescents. Also, listen to our book bite for Girls on the Brink, Helping Our Daughters Thrive in an Era of Increased Anxiety, Depression, and Social Media, by Donna Jackson Nakazawa. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.